Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Don't care for the 20th century.
I do not. I will now tell you as succinctly as possible how I classify the times. We live in a cesspool, a septic tank, a gigantic sewage complex in which runs the dregs, the filth, the misery-laden slop of the race of men.
Tomorrow that Garfield...
What did you say? When what?
Oh, nothing. I was just talking to myself.
Odd fella. Real odd.
Maybe he just don't hold with President Garfield.
Maybe he's a Democrat.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
Save time in a bottle. The first thing that I'd like to do is to save every day till eternity passes away, just to spend them with you.
Can't work because I know too many things. I know about too many tomorrows.
Tomorrows?
Your history, Abby. You and this town and the people in it. Everything about it, your history. And I can't change you. I can't even touch you.
Open this door door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone. My name is Lynn, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Bobby and Robert. Hi, guys.
Howdy.
And unfortunately, Dave couldn't be with us today, but if he can't stop in later, I'm hoping maybe he left a little something in Robert's email.
He's time traveling back to the prehistoric era, so hopefully he'll be back on next show.
Oh, he's going to be in Odyssey on Flight 33, right?
In Golden Ages, yeah.
Yeah. But if not, then we'll look forward to seeing him on the next show. And, of course, I want to welcome guest number four. Oh, guest number four left. Oh, I hope he'll be back. And Lou. Hello, Lou.
Hi, Lynn.
Always glad to see Lou here. So, today, it's actually a pretty nice day here today. You know, we've got a little sunshine. We've had some sunshine for the past few days.
Well, you should have kicked it over here. We had our sunshine yesterday. It's been dark and gloomy. Just perfect for today's episode, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're supposed
to get rain.
With a
grumpy scientist.
we're supposed to get rain later this week, but it's been pretty nice lately. My cat's been enjoying it, so I've been looking out the window a lot. Yeah, Sebastian's been enjoying it. Yeah, Rick's not here either. I can't find out how Daphne's doing, but everything's going well. Weather's good. And today, we're feeling groovy. Don't make me do that Brady Bunch. It's a sunshine day. And
Partridge
today,
Family, which is worse? There's a good discussion. Partridge Family or Brady Bunch?
Brady Bunch. Yeah, Brady Bunch. Certain episodes, yeah, Brady Bunch. But,
especially when Peter changes his voice.
Oh, God, yeah, when they were singing, I know. Good old puberty.
Yeah.
Anyway, today we're talking about an episode from season 4 called No Time Like the Past. And Robert, please grace us with a wonderful opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Exit 1, Paul Driscoll, a creature of the 20th century. He puts to a test a complicated theorem of space-time continuum. But he goes a step further, or tries to. Shortly, he will seek out three moments of the past in a desperate attempt to alter the present, one of the odd and fanciful functions in a shadowland known as the Twilight Zone.
I just love that music. Oh, suspenseful, intense music. Well, yes, this is called No Time Like the Past, starred Dana Andrews. And basically, we have a gentleman here named Paul Driscoll, and he's very cynical over the direction that the 20th century is going. So he solicits the help of his colleague, Harvey, and he uses a time machine with the very noble intention of going back in time and trying to alter past events, so that he can minimize the loss of human life, I suppose, in involving the First and Second World Wars. So he first travels to Hiroshima in August of 1945, or back to August of 1945, and he attempts to warn a Hiroshima police captain about the atomic bomb and tries to convince him to evacuate the city. And, of course, as you can expect, his warnings are dismissed, and he's unable to change that part of history. So then he travels to a Berlin hotel. And he's in the hotel room with all the intention of assassinating Adolf Hitler. And this is August 1939, and immediately before the outbreak of World War II in September of 1939. But, of course, his plans are interrupted when a hotel housekeeper knocks on the door, and then later two SS guards come to his room, And he ends up leaving before he assassinates Hitler. Oh, darn it. And then on his third journey to the past, Paul tries to change the course of the Lusitania to avoid the ship being torpedoed by the World War I German U-boat. But
well, if he didn't land on the Titanic, it would have been worse.
There you go.
Turn away from that iceberg.
And watch it. Turn left. Turn left. But he's unable to do that with the Lusitania because the ship's captain questions his believability. So Paul accepts the hypothesis here that the past can't be changed. And he then uses the time machine to journey to the town of Homeville, Indiana, back to 1881.
With I always want to see what it was like, Marty, to go back into the West.
Well, his whole intention is escaping. He wants to live out this quiet, uncomplicated life, you know. I mean, 1881, you know, it's like Willoughby, you know, Willoughby. What more can you ask, you know? This really quiet life of horse and buggies and, you know, this is just great. And
Willoughby,
then,
stop at Willoughby.
Willoughby. Homeville, stop at Homeville. And then he realizes, oh, my goodness, he realizes that President Garfield is going to get shot the next day. Oh, damn, this guy just can't catch a break. So he allows
the assassin. I guess he wasn't Republican. I guess he
was. He wasn't. And he allows the assassination to happen. It just ends up happening because he just decides he knows he can't change time. So he allows the assassination to happen. And while he's in 1881, he stays at this boarding house in town. He meets Abigail Sloan, lovely Abigail Sloan, this fellow resident teacher at the schoolhouse. And at one of the boarding house's dinners, he gets into an argument with another boarder over war and imperialism and all kinds of political things. And then after reading in a history book that the schoolhouse will burn down because of a kerosene lantern that is thrown off of a runaway wagon, he spots the wagon and attempts to prevent this from occurring. But instead, oh my gosh, he causes the fire he intended to prevent. So afterwards, Paul tells Abigail that the past is sacred, and he returns to his own time, having learned not to tamper with the past. Oh, well, there
he was trying to recreate Chicago with the horse.
Yes, yes. Mrs. What's her name's fire? The cow.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. What's her name's cow?
Yeah.
What was that woman's name?
Mrs. O'Leary's cow.
O'Leary, thank you, Bobby. Mrs. O'Leary's cow. But yeah, that was Rod Serling's moral in the story. Basically, be satisfied with what you have in the present because you can't change the past. And if you're not satisfied, oh, well, you still can't change the past, so tough crap. So that's the way it goes. And
Rod likes poetry, too, looking for us.
Yes, he does. Well, you know, face it, the guy was very disgruntled, you know. And he had a right to be. I mean, he had a lot of tragic events that occurred in the world, you know. But he should have been intelligent enough to know that he couldn't possibly alter the course of human events. You know, these things have already taken place. He, you know, builds a time machine, you know, which proves he has a brain. You know, he's able to build this machine. But he seemed to be lacking common sense. It was reminiscent of shows like Quantum Leap and The Time Tunnel. But as we saw in those series, the past will always remain the same. Now, I was impressed with the time machine, though. It's one of the best props the Twilight Zone ever had. But, of course, if Driscoll was so worried about a nuclear war, why didn't he invent something to destroy nuclear bombs instead of a time machine? But
well, they must have been close to a shipyard, because that looks like a submarine.
Yeah. It did look like a submarine, but I don't know. I guess a machine to, you know, destroy bombs, that's beyond his expertise, whatever that was. They never really told you what kind of an engineer or whatever he was, but he seemed to have a brain. But he definitely learned that he couldn't tamper with history, and he realized that he couldn't stand by and watch tragic events unfold either. Not right before him. I mean, he knew about them. He was helpless to stop them. And he found this out when he made the decision to live that simpler life in the 1800s. He knew too much to be happy there either. What I didn't understand was why he was keeping his secret from Abigail. I mean, she seemed to be the only one who would have believed him. I mean, she was very kind. She seemed to really care about him. But, you know, this was another one of those whirlwind romances that we've been seeing a lot of recently in the Twilight Zone. Looks as though he was only in the boarding house, what, for about a day or two before he's locking lips with her outside, you know? I mean, it seems that the fire was destined to happen with or without him, just like every other historic event he tried to prevent. So, you know, he didn't give much notice to the folks he was warning with those other events. I mean, when he went back to Hiroshima and when he went to Berlin, well, Berlin we don't count, but Hiroshima and Lucinda, he didn't give them much warning. I mean, why didn't he go back in time a week or even a month before the events he was trying to change? He still wouldn't have been able to prevent the tragedies. But at least he would have had more time to prepare to fail, or at least to warn the people. No, I mean, I'm just being kind of sarcastic here, but expecting a whole city to be evacuated in a few minutes, you know, isn't that a bit ludicrous? I mean, yes, okay, you know, just in 10 minutes now, get everybody out of here. I mean, come on.
Well, in defense of the Hiroshima thing, he did say that he was in custody for 6 hours, but still, 6 hours is still
you can't evacuate
amount of
the city in 6 hours either, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It is kind of ridiculous. I kind of assumed that he couldn't spend that much time. I guess he felt the more time he spent in the past, he had a greater chance of changing too many things. I don't know.
That could be.
But you're right.
Too.
They never explain it.
Well, as we saw, he could have shot Hitler if his rifle hadn't jammed. But these things kept happening because the events couldn't be changed. So somehow history. Yeah, predestined. So somehow destiny was keeping him from changing anything. Natural course of time wouldn't allow this alteration.
Well, of history. I actually think he was just kind of like the worst time traveler to change history, actually. The part that got me the most and the part that I chuckled with was he's aiming his rifle at Hitler. The knock comes at the door. Who is it? The maid, I come to clean up your room. Not now.
Why did you shoot her?
Fresh towels
shot
and
her.
Soap. Oh, okay, come in. That's just, you know, I was like, oh, she has fresh towels and stuff. Well, that's all different. Let me open the door. Just give me time to hide my rifle.
Exactly.
Just, she, you know, I mean, the only thing I could assume is that he didn't want to get caught.
Well, he should have shot her and then shot Hitler.
His gun probably would have jammed anyway. He tried to shoot her.
Yeah, he would have jammed anyway, exactly.
Yeah.
But if he shot her first, what difference would it have made? You know, he's going back. He's going to go back to the press. I mean, it's unbelievable. And these whirlwind romance.
Now, if it was an American rifle, it would have been desperate.
he constantly does those mistakes, even with the end. I mean, he could have just easily just gotten rid of a lamp instead. Now you got to unhitch your horses. We have to do the most complex tasks to avoid the simplest, you know.
Exactly. And these forward romances kill me. I mean, you know, people that meet somebody and 2 days later they're going to get married, they're in love. You know, come on. You know, I mean, the same thing happened in West Side Story. You know, the guy goes and he sees Maria. Tony goes and meets Maria in a club. He sees her from across the room. He falls madly in love, and they're ready to run away together in the course of one evening. You know what? Got me a break.
Love at first sight. Oh.
You know what? Driscoll probably would have enjoyed his life in Homeville. I think he would have enjoyed being back in 1801, but he wasn't supposed to be there. And now my next question is, how did he get back to the 20th century if his stay in Homeville was supposed to be permanent?
That's my question exactly.
Yeah. There are a lot
you know,
of unanswered questions.
That's the problem with this whole episode, is all the little plot holes and stuff like that. I mean, he could have easily convinced any of those people just by disappearing in front of them. Well, you know, if you don't believe me, watch this trick. Poof.
Yeah, there you go.
I got the impression that no one could be around for him to disappear, but I don't know. That also doesn't make sense.
Maybe he had a professional rock holder with him, and he banged him on the head. He's ready to travel.
There are a lot of unanswered questions in this episode. And Homeville did look a lot like Gart Williams Willoughby. But poor Gart, he had to die to get there. Sadly, he didn't have a cool time machine like Driscoll's. It's a great machine because it even changes his clothes for him. Did you notice that? even gets these wardrobe changes. I thought
the father of the replicator from Star Trek.
Yeah,
That's what it was.
Made him perfectly at home. I thought one of the most chilling scenes, though, in this episode came when the Japanese captain looked at the photo of his wife and child in the frame as the sound of the bomber plane could be heard overhead, and then the explosion occurs, hurls him across the room, and then we see the empty frame on top of the wreckage. Wow. Now, that was an intense scene. I did think that was kind of chilling.
Yeah.
And
you know, I laughed as soon as the explosion hit because I said, wow, that's how much time he gave him. That's when I realized how bad a time traveler this guy was. I thought there was going to be, at least it would have been better if he had gone home and seen his family. We'd known some time had passed.
Yes, but it was within seconds.
Yeah, it was like, is this? It just didn't make sense.
Kind of ridiculous, exactly. And I don't know if anyone else noticed this, but there was a little goof in editing, and this comes from watching the episodes so many times as I do, but it was during the bar scene when Driscoll first arrives in Homeville. He goes into the bar and he orders a beer, and then he walks away from the bar towards one of the tables. And when he walks away, his beer is still sitting on the bar as he walks away. But when the scene cuts to him next to the table, he's holding his beer. the continuity guy was asleep that day, that's the kind of thing, Lou, we were talking about this earlier, I've watched it so many times, I've watched these episodes that after a while you don't really pay attention to the story, you start looking for little gaffes, you start looking for little things like that, and that's something that I noticed. And, and you watch them enough times, you catch these little things. But, I thought Dana Andrews did a good job in his role. And his rant at the dinner table was awesome. I loved his rant. But, and this was his only Twilight Zone appearance. And Patricia Breslin, she was good as Abigail, very sensitive school teacher. And she was also in William Shatner in Nick of Time from, I think that was season two. I forget now. But, season two. It was season two. The acting by the whole cast was great. The story was enjoyable to a point. A lot of things didn't make sense. I don't remember what, I think I gave it a 3. I might have been a little generous there, but I think I did give it a 3. But, it had a lot of unanswered questions. Oh, but I'm going to turn that over to you, Robert, now. Let's hear your take.
I know. I had a lot of questions like you did about this episode. I mean, well, I called this episode the Fog Machine of Time. So.
Well, I think the biggest question was, if he was supposed to be in Homeville permanently, he should never have been able to get back to the 20th century. So that was, to me, was the biggest question. That's why I shouldn't have given the 3, but...
Well, the whole thing, too, and the talk is supposedly if you travel in time, you can only travel forward, not in the past, because if you travel back to the past, then you cause a paradox.
Mm-hmm.
Of course,
yeah.
There's other shows that they do go in the past. Quantum Leap is a good one with Sam, but that's where Sam, when he leaps, he has to leap into somebody else. And then he can't do anything major, can only affect that person's life and change that person. So time travel with that series was very limited on what they do. And through each leap, he had more and more memory loss. So that's why he had to have Al there to kind of fill in the missing pieces to, I would say, Swiss cheese brain, so to say. But I like Dan Andrews. I mean, he's a great actor. I remember Night of the Demons, Crack in the World, Battle of the Bulge, and so on. Yeah, so, I mean, it's nice to get a recognizable name in this episode. And as I've said in past episodes, I do, enjoy time travel. But like you, Lynn, this one provided more questions than answers.
Mm-hmm.
One of my questions I had is, why didn't Paul show the police captain Hiroshima something like a history book, driver's license from his era, a watch or something that was not from that time, something that wasn't made in that era to convince him that well,
yeah,
not
but,
from...
But see, my question with that now, would that be like that movie Somewhere in Time with Christopher Reeve? If he pulled out something from the present time, would he be blown right back in?
Yeah, that's something, because everything had to be authentic.
Yeah, that's why his clothes changed and everything.
Travel. Yeah.
Right, that's why his clothes changed.
He finds that one mistake he made brought him back. And was he really time traveling physically, or was it in his mind? Was
True.
The thing about that movie as well? You know, did he put himself into a catatonic state? We're talking about somewhere in time where he travels back into the past and meets Jane Seymour and falls in love with her and all that. Yeah.
And he takes that penny from 1973 out.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as he looks at that 1973 penny, he's gone. You just see him flying back to the, you know. It's one of my all-time favorite movies.
Yeah, I enjoy that movie, too. And, you know, I brought that question up about the Captain Lusitania, and he done the same thing. And secondly, not only did the gun jam with the Adolf Hitler portion there, but why did he take so much time to go through it?
Yeah.
And how many times can you check your sights and do all that stuff before you actually pull the trigger and kill him?
Yeah, I mean, it was like it took forever. It was, I mean, Lee Harvey Oswald, you know. It's like boom, 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 you know. And this guy's like, "What? Wait a minute. Let me just double check one more time. Make sure. I just want to make sure my hair looks good." He was checking every little detail, you know.
You know, it would have been kind of nice if he had a picture, kind of, you know, a la Back to the Future, where, you know, Marty had a picture of him and his brother and sister, showing what was happening while he was there in the past.
They were disappearing.
Yeah. They were alternating. That would have been kind of interesting for this one. And then we get another question. When Paul realizes he can't change the past, he decides to live in it. Doc Brown wanting the 1800s, simpler times in life and stuff. And then we get the all back there will be situation. But here again, he did nothing with the assassination of Garfield. Just kind of blows it off and says, "Oh, well, you know, I can't save him, President Garfield," whatever he says under his breath as he leaves. But, you know, instead of being a bystander in the past, he actually creates a school event to find Doc. And I don't know if I misunderstood this, but now supposedly 12 children was killed. But at the end, did he say 4 were killed?
Only 4, yeah.
Then he saved 8 kids from dying. Or did I hear that incorrectly?
No, I think only 4. But didn't it say in the book it said 12?
So he saved 8 children.
No, but no, yeah, now I'm a little confused too, because I can't remember. I'm not sure, did they say 12 children were injured, or did they say 12 children were killed?
See, now I don't remember either.
I have to go back
either.
And watch that, yeah.
Yeah, I'll check
that. Why
wasn't
he arrested? For the end. Oh, okay, we'll just let you go. Go back to your time and, you know, oh, well, they died.
Yeah, well, that was a good thing. If he was going to be arrested, he just goes back, you know.
Oh, well. And then, like you, Lynn, that question, how did he get back to the past? I mean, did he bump his head on something and boom, you know, he's where he was?
He was supposed to be there for good. That was where he was supposed to live out his life.
Right, and we see that he travels in mystic fog. But is there a certain word he uses or some kind of device that he presses to go back? Well, why didn't they use the device from that one where, you know, they made people or things disappear, that one we reviewed a few episodes ago? The one that had James Doohan in it? Crashes his car into a solid wall of nothingness.
Yeah, let me think.
That episode.
That was Valley of the Shadow.
Yeah. I mean, they could have used that device from that for this to make it at least a little more reasonable that, okay, he presses this device and he can go back or whatever.
Yeah, that would have worked.
And why did he leave Abigail hanging out to dry like that? Why did he start a romance with her only to go back
alone.
To the present? Yeah.
Yeah, she fell in love with him in 2 days, of course. But, you know, she fell in love with him and then she's like, left in the dust. She probably killed herself.
Well, have a good life. Goodbye.
You know, I was expecting him to say something about Abigail, like he knew something about her history that he couldn't involve himself with, but they never went into that either.
Yeah.
Well, remember Back to the Future, supposedly someone was supposed to die, remember? But saved in the third episode.
Oh, you know what? The third episode of Back to the Future is the only one I didn't see. I saw 1 and 2. I didn't see the third one.
Oh, you're talking about the love interest of Christopher.
The school teacher, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
They think she died. What happened was that she went into the future, but since the train still went over the edge and supposedly she was on the train.
Yeah, Eastwood Levine.
Yeah.
I have to
That's right, because, yeah. Oh, yeah, they're fun movies. Gonna go, like, City on the Edge of Forever, where we find about Edith Keeler and, like, he falls in love with her, but he can't because if he does, he'll change history. But like I said, they never went that route. They just really kind of shortchanged everything in this episode.
Mm. Going with this, I kind of give it a 2 out of 5. I was very low on this, and a lot of it was just the questions.
Yeah, I agree.
Too many questions to, and you have the natural filler for it being a season 4 episode. So. But on my way out here before we go to Bobby, a blast from the past.
Such stories as H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds and Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea have challenged mankind. So today, man is successfully probing deep into the mysteries of the universe. Can he penetrate the greatest mystery of all, time itself? Magic of George Pal and the fabulous production know-how of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer to catapult you through time into a world that is yet to be.
Why is it that we usually ignore the fourth dimension? You see, we can move in the other three. As the doctor said, up, down, forwards, backwards, sideways. But when it comes to time, we are prisoners.
Inventor Rod Taylor's breakthrough into the realm of the fourth dimension is defied by his friend Alan Young.
If that machine can do what you say it can, destroy it, George, before it destroys you.
Every moment is a year, hurtling through the atomic wars of the future on an incredible excursion into the unknown. What are the people like? Ah, the shape of things to come. It's lovely Yvette Mimieux. And what happens when boy meets girl thousands of years hence?
How do they wear their hair?
Who?
The women of your time.
Up like that.
Show me.
Is this the human race of the future? Or is this the Morlocks, fiendish creatures who live in a weird underground world? And the Eloi, the tranquil sunshine people, who the Morlocks dominate and maintain like cattle, luring them below with the hypnotic wail of the sirens, to feed upon them in cannibalistic horror.
Classic time machine favorite. Little Rod himself, Rod Taylor.
Yep.
Okay, over to you, Bobby.
Oh, my good Lord. What in the hell is all this goddamn nitpicking on this show today? I mean, really? It is science fiction, after all.
I'm trying to be like you today.
About why didn't they answer this, and why this, and why that, why do you go here, why do you go there? I mean, it's science fiction. And science fiction, you accept whatever that's in front of you. I mean, if you're going to nitpick like that, then you can't watch anything because the idea of aliens invading the Earth and everything else is ridiculous. So I'm a little shocked at all this taking this apart piece by piece. I find that kind of ridiculous. I mean, if you want to go down that route, then you could go to the classic Twilight Zone episodes and do the same thing. What was Inger Stevens doing driving across the country by herself in The Hitchhiker, and why did the people on Maple Street decide to go after each other instead of calling the police and finding out what was going on? So, you know, there are holes everywhere. So I don't think it's really fair to take this episode on and just, you know, pull it apart like that. So I'm a little put off by that. Anyway, most of the things I was going to say have already been said by everybody, but I'll do my best. I'll start out by saying that miracles do happen. 2 season 4 episodes in a row that I actually enjoyed. Who would have imagined that such a thing could happen? I do really enjoy this episode, and after watching it again earlier today, I can honestly say that my enthusiasm for it has not really diminished. Of course, I have to admit that I am a sucker for time travel stories, and that began when I read my very first one back in the early part of the last century when I was a child, and I was fascinated by The Time Machine by H.G. Wells, which has already been mentioned extensively, and that was written in 1895. Since then, of course, there have been countless adaptations of the story over the years, both in feature films, TV series, comic books, on and on and on. And has also been mentioned, as Robert just played a clip from about it, was the 1960 feature film with Rod Taylor. Actually, one of my all-time favorite movies. If I had to pick one that is about time travel, I would use that. It's very, I don't own it personally. It's very rarely on TV, but it is worth watching.
I love it, too, especially the mannequin scene is classic in that.
Oh, yeah, when he's looking at the old mannequins changing. That's pretty awesome.
And Time Tunnel was mentioned. Time Tunnel only ran one season, and there's some interesting stuff at the Internet Movie Database about Time Tunnel, and that is that it had mixed reviews from critics when it came on, and it had pretty mediocre ratings. It was on Friday nights, which doesn't help any. ABC was going to renew the series. However, they went to Irwin Allen, who created the series, and told him that his budget was too high and that unless he agreed to scale back the budget, that they would cancel the series.
Was it on CBS?
No, it was on ABC.
Oh, okay, because that's CBS would creep to do that.
And he told them basically to stick it. He said, if I have to cut back on the budget, I'll cancel the series, which he did. So,
all right,
knowing
man,
what we know about CBS, knowing what we know about CBS and what they did to Rod Serling, we're very lucky that he didn't do the same thing, or there might not be much to talk about. Twilight Zone might have ended after one or two seasons if he had simply said, if you're going to give me no money, then I'm not going to make anything. So that was kind of a close call. Anyway, let's face it, the concept of time travel is very appealing. I mean, who would not want to travel to the future to see how amazing the world will be, since you surely won't live nearly long enough to see it. But I think most of all, who would not want to go back in time to your own life to correct all of the mistakes and screw-ups that made trouble for you then and still do to this very day? I know that would sure as hell keep me busy. The problem is this character, along with all the other ones who came before him and after him, found out you really can't change a thing, and indeed you just might make things worse by injecting yourself into a scenario you really don't belong in, as we found out here. Naturally, for dramatic purposes, every time someone in fiction can travel back in time, they end up not in their own past, but in some terrible moment before disaster strikes somewhere in the world. Any attempt to avoid it always ends in failure. As I expressed in my review of this episode at our Twilight Zone group, I believe there is an obvious reason for this, aside from the fact that nobody will believe you anyway, and that is because you simply can't alter one moment in time or one incident without changing all that comes after it. That's what history is all about. Everything that's happened before leads us up to now, and everything that happens now will lead people who haven't been born yet in the future.
So, Bobby, you believe in a fixed point in time then, correct?
Well, I think you could say that, yeah.
Hmm.
In the disasters in this episode that Driscoll tries to prevent, many people die, like at Hiroshima. Take this out and they will live, those people will live, and perhaps even change the world, maybe for good, but possibly for the bad. It's a big risk. There are people who don't live out their lives. Who knows what they might have done? They might have changed the world in some way. They might have come up with a cure for a terrible disease. You never know. I mean, so many bad things have happened in the half century since this episode was filmed in the early 60s. You can only speculate on how many other disasters Driscoll might have tried to prevent if he could do it in a story that was written today. As we rapidly approach the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination in just a few weeks, could he kill Lee Harvey Oswald in time before he killed JFK? Could he go back now and warn people at airports to watch out for terrorists who are going to destroy the World Trade Center and kill thousands? Probably not. Nobody would believe you. And even if you could do it, and you could use, like Robin mentioned, why didn't he take this or that with him to show that it actually happened? Even if you use today's technology to show videotape of what actually happened, I do believe people would just think you were good at special effects. They wouldn't believe it if they were looking at it anyway. To say nothing of the suspicion you would cast upon yourself, after all. How do you know that this terrible thing is going to happen? How do you know that the World Trade Center is going to be destroyed unless you're behind it or you're part of it and you simply got cold feet at the end and now decided not to go through with it? That's we're looking for terrorists under every rock now. And if you go to the future or you go back that way and say, look, this is terrible thing's going to happen, you've got to be more careful, you're putting yourself in jeopardy. Besides, there is never any real time to change anything, as Lynn already mentioned. He goes back to Hiroshima, but what for? The bomb goes off less than 10 minutes after he gets there. So So even if anybody believes them, there's no time to evacuate anyone. It really is hopeless.
But you know what else? The fact that the person goes back in time, right? Like this guy goes back in time. Nobody else but him went back in time. So what about the other people who are still living in, like he went back from 1963 to 1930-something, but he's the only one who went back. There are still people, the whole rest of the world is still living in 1963. So that is the main reason why I don't think anything could be changed, because what has already happened has happened. And those people are still are now living their lives.
That's just a variation of what I just said, and that is the fact that you can't change an incident. You can't change one thing because everything is interconnected. It has already happened, and, you know, I mean, we are where we are today in 2013 simply because we're living in this world and all these other things have already happened. So I think it's ridiculous to think you can change one thing.
Well, the way they get around that in these shows and movies is alternate timelines is how they use that.
Yeah.
Back to the Future was good about that. And everybody else seems to follow suit.
As I said, I do like this episode. Actually, one that I think needed to be an hour long. There's really no filler or endless unnecessary dialogue that drags things out forever. And I was never bored. And even the love story angle near the end seemed to add to it. Certainly didn't detract from it. Unlike Robert, I was never a big fan of Dana Andrews, but I do like him here. Does a very good job without going over the top.
No, actually, even, Robert does like Dana Andrews.
I said that.
Yeah, he's good. Good actor.
I said, unlike Robert, I was never a big fan of Dana. Anyway, even the special effects, given the paltry Twilight Zone budget, are not all that bad like it is in some episodes. So it is possible, after all, to do an hour-long Twilight Zone episode and keep me awake. And there is one more later on that I also am very fond of. In my review, I gave this a 3 out of 5, but unlike Lynn, to be honest, I might even have pushed it closer to 4. I really do like it that much. With these three plus two all-time classics to come in Season 5, The Twilight Zone just might have a little life left in it after all. Compared to the other stories in Season 4, and the fact that we've got to do The Bard yet, oh, please, God, forgive me.
Yeah, oh, I can't wait.
When you get there, you're going to wish you were back here, let me tell you. Because nothing but
George
nothing
Washington. Benjamin
nothing.
Franklin. Pocahontas.
Wait, I'm leaving my rating at a 3 because I did think it was good. I was a little annoyed at some of the unanswered questions, but no, I'm leaving that at 3 because it was a good story, and it didn't. You're right; it didn't have much filler at all, and it was interesting all the way through.
Yeah, it needed to be an hour long, and that is a rare event in Season 4. But I just think you got to be careful in looking at something and saying there are quote unquote unanswered questions. And then maybe the reason I feel that way is because my mother was like that. She used to watch TV, and because I didn't have my own, I had to watch it with her. And no matter what she was watching, even if it was good and even if she liked it, she'd always end off when it was over by saying, "That's ridiculous. How come this and how come that and how come we didn't do this and how come we didn't?" She'd drive me crazy. And I used to think to myself, why don't you just watch a story and stop picking it apart piece by piece? I mean, it's either good or it's not, or it's interesting or it's not. And, you know, there are a lot of unanswered questions. When I watch, and especially in this series, I mean, it's science fiction, so, you know, I'm not gonna go crazy over that. Anyway, I liked it for once, and I'll just look forward to the next one I like, which is several weeks away yet, and try to live through the rest of the crap in this season. All right, Lynn, back to you.
Okay, Lou, let's hear from you.
Okay, well, first, in defense of nitpicking the episode, I think when it comes to, especially time travel stories, there has to be some kind of internal consistency. One thing has to kind of follow the other. I mean, you know, they're talking about how Driscoll couldn't change the past, but for me, those first three attempts were just, like, really inept attempts. I mean, you know, with the Hiroshima thing, I mean, he goes back in time, he goes back to Hiroshima in Japan, and he doesn't know Japanese, but somehow he thinks he's going to be able to convince people he can't even talk to. He gets lucky that he finally meets a Japanese person who speaks and translate. I mean,
yeah, but
did he
deliberately go back to Hiroshima, or did he just happen to land there?
No, I thought
it was deliberate. I thought he was picking points in time that he could change events to make. Because his problem was he was upset with the world. So he was thinking about moments in time that he could change to maybe make the world better, which is also kind of a
crazy. Yeah, he plans the three trips. Hey, Lou, is it Hiroshima or Hiroshima? Is it Hiroshima? Hiroshima or Hiroshima?
I usually hear it pronounced as Hiroshima.
And I've heard it Hiroshima. Oh, well.
Potato, potato, tomato, tomato.
But, you know, that's my point. Those first three attempts, they just, I mean, the Lusitania one might have worked a little bit better, but like the one with Hitler, I mean, he was interrupted by a lady who wanted to give him fresh towels and soaps, and he agrees. It's just, I was laughing at that moment. It was like, first he tells the lady to go away, which, you know, of course, go away.
Shoot her.
Then she says, and I had to replay it because I couldn't believe it. It was like, but I have fresh towels and soap. He goes, okay. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. So, you know, admittedly, throughout this whole episode, when he goes back into the past, finally, to, like, live out the rest of his lives, and the events start ratcheting up, I thought he was actually going to change time. I just thought he was just really bad about it. And even when he goes back, the guy warns him, be careful, don't change time. You do one little change, you're going to change everything.
Then step on that butterfly. Be careful.
And admittedly, that's the part of the episode that I actually like. It's the idea that it brings forth, that if you could go back in time, and you're faced with this question. I mean, you brought up 9/11, and I thought that was kind of an interesting concept. If I had gone back, and I should come back like September 10th, 2001, what would I do, knowing what's going to happen the next day? Could I just sit idly by and let the disaster take place? Would I try to do something? And you're right, I would have to plan it carefully so that I'm not looked like a fraud or get in trouble for revealing what I know. And, you know, I saw that little bit of conflict in Driscoll's character. Because, you know, he sees that Grant's going to die, but what can he do? Grant was being shot somewhere else on a rail yard. He couldn't go from where he was over there, so he kind of lets that go. When something more local is about to happen, he realizes it, and he realizes that children are going to die. And he's faced with that quandary of, do I try to do something? Can I do something? And, you know, at that point, you know, I still was wondering whether or not he was going to change it. And, of course, that was another screw-up because basically, you know, it was the lamp. He could have easily taken the lamp off or told the guy, turn off your lamp, you know.
Yeah.
Or take the lamp and throw it on the floor and break it. But no, you got to unhitch your horses. You have to do this complex task. No, I'm not going to do it simple. I'm going to do it as complex as possible. See, and it's just that, you know, I just thought the way, like I said, I thought he
did everything
the worst.
The hard way.
Yeah.
He
was the worst
way.
Time
yeah.
traveler possible.
Uh-huh.
But I did like the ideas that it brought up. I liked the ideas of.
Time traveler ever.
But, but I did like the questions that it brought up about, you know, what do you do if you're faced with this idea of an impending disaster that you know is going to happen? How would you react? Do you not do anything because you're afraid it will change things further along? You know, those ideas were good. I liked the political nature of the episode. I mean, the opening speech that Driscoll gives is kind of a politically charged one. And then the one he gives at the dinner table.
The dinner table was great.
Interesting speech. I mean, yeah.
It was really good.
I mean, I think that's why, Abigail fell in love with Driscoll. It's kind of like she found a like-minded person at a time
yeah,
where people probably didn't
awesome.
Think like that. But you're right, that romance happened fast. But, you know, this is Hollywood, this is the movies and TV, so of course, you have they're kindred spirits. They're...
Yeah, it has to happen fast or it doesn't happen, exactly.
So, yeah, but, you know, like I said, it's just, you know, those, you know, they're just a little, you're right, I am nitpicking to a certain degree. I could nitpick about the time machine being two stories high and, God forbid you should fall off the scaffolding or something. But
Or we could pick on a man that travels in a blue box in space and time too. So.
Well, the only thing I have to say is I can see it, you know, when it lands in London all the time makes sense. When it lands somewhere else what's a blue telephone box doing here in 2012? But you know. But you're right. But like I said, the time travel moments I didn't like. The ideas that it was presenting, I did like. I liked the acting. You say there was no filler. I think maybe that whole first sequence of the first three time travel jumps might have been filler for the character. You know, basically that was just a big setup to say that time is inviolate. We can't change it. So, you know, they showed those three first examples. But in some ways that is filler. They could have just started saying, like, well, we can't change time, so I'm going to go back to a place where it's nice. And then... But, you know, it was an interesting look, you know.
That's a pretty boring story.
Well, it's a good setup, I think, but I just don't like the way it was handled. I wish it seemed like, you know, it seemed like he sabotaged his attempts to change time rather than time was deliberately doing things. Like when the gun refuses to load, that makes sense. You know, if other things happen, someone got in the way of him being able to get a clear shot, something beyond his control, it just seemed to me that the reason why he failed was mostly his fault rather than events outside of himself. And that would have probably sold it more to me that time is unchangeable. And, you know, nowadays with a lot of movies, they do try to make movies where people do change time. I was thinking about Source Code, and you guys were talking about not being able to change the past. And in that film, the character actually does manage to stop something that had already happened in the future.
What movie? What movie is
it's
that?
It's a movie called Source Code. It was with Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah, it's a recent film. It involved him. He was supposed to be like a war veteran who they were placing his consciousness in a person who had died on the train, but they wanted him to find out where the bomb was and to get information about where a future bomb was being supposedly placed. They wanted him to identify the bomber so that they could find him before he could set off this other bomb. But he actually is able to change events in the past so that the first explosion doesn't happen. It's actually kind of interesting.
And Moonstar, we have a person just logged in here, Moonstar. He said he saw that one. He saw that movie.
Yeah. And I feel a little bit bad because I think I just spoiled the movie.
But that's
the idea that the new Star Trek movie deals with alternate universe, alternate realities. I mean, the new Star Trek basically says that the past history of Star Trek never existed. It's starting an entirely new mythos, which a lot of Star Trek fans are upset with. I'm not too upset with it. You know, I like the show. I like the ideas. If they just want to redo it again, something new, I'm fine with that. But, you know, I like the idea that time can be changed and that maybe the history that we have is an incorrect history, you know?
Wouldn't it be great if we could go back in time and change certain things that went wrong in our lives, you know? Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah, but then what happens is that you realize that the things you change are the things that actually helped you grow into be a better person.
Made you who you are, yeah.
I don't know. Is there anyone else who's a Star Trek fan who saw the episode with what was it called? It was called Tapestry.
I'm sure Robert did.
Yeah, with Q, definitely.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Was a good one.
Yeah. Picard regretted the fact that he got into that fight with the Nausicaans, and then what happened? He ended up just being a lowly lieutenant because he never faced death at that young age.
Yeah, he has to talk with Troy and Reichert about how he could change or move up in the ranks, and they said that he did chances, and that's what pretty much. He played it safe, in other words, and that's what Q told him that he did play it safe.
Well, Robert, you remember the season 2 Twilight Zone episode back there, right? The one with the Russell Johnson from Gilligan's Island, professor from Gilligan's Island, where he goes back to back in time, not intentionally. He doesn't intentionally go back in time, but he goes back in time, and then he goes back to when the night that Lincoln was supposed to be assassinated, and he tries to prevent that and couldn't. But he does everything in his power to do it, and he can't.
That's what that Hiroshima scene kind of reminded me of back there.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, John Booth apprehends him, and
Lincoln's going to be shot.
Yeah.
You got to stop it.
Exactly. And John Wilkes Booth apprehends Russell Johnson's character and drugs him and keeps him from saying anything, and he ends up killing Lincoln.
Well, let me give you my review real quick. So basically, I think I give it 2.5 stars. I really enjoyed the premise. I just didn't like the execution of the time travel elements. And I like movies that actually, in this one where the past can't be changed, it becomes kind of almost pointless to go into the past. I mean, especially like he said, faced with all the history that he knows. I mean, you guys were talking about time travel movies. I remember another movie called Time After Time.
Oh, with Matthew McDowell and Barry Steenburgen.
Yeah,
I was going to bring that up. Yes.
That's a great movie.
Oh,
and if you remember,
that.
Mary Steenburgen's character is supposed to have died, but she ended up marrying Wells in the past, and that's who he really married in supposed real life.
I was going to bring that up. I love that movie. Tommy
that is
Tom.
A great movie.
Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper. Yeah. Yep, that is one of my all-time favorite movies. Right after, what the hell was the one we were talking about with Christopher Reeves? Somewhere in Time.
Oh, Somewhere in Time.
And Time After Time. I love Time After Time. I have that on DVD. That is one
of the best
travel movies ever. Who was the guy who played Jack the Ripper? He died.
David Warner.
And he's not dead. He's still alive.
He died.
He does a lot of Star Trek.
Nope, he's still alive. He's still doing audio for Big Finish.
gosh, why did I think he died? I thought he did. He was a fabulous actor.
He's a great actor. Too bad he doesn't get a lot of roles.
I know. He is wonderful. He was
I was so disappointed when all he was the guard on Titanic. It was like, really? This is what you use David Warner for in Titanic, just to be some bodyguard? Wow.
He's wonderful. He was wonderful as Jack Thorburn. I like when he walked in to the first prostitute's house or apartment, and she says, oh, you're early. He goes, I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait. and then she sits down, and he comes up, and he just slits her throat. Oh, my God. I couldn't wait.
You know, my favorite scene with him is where he's about to leave the bank, and then all of a sudden he shows up right in Mary Steenburgen's face.
Oh, and she looks up and like, and she was terrific, you know, trying to act like nothing was wrong, but he knew. Oh God, I love that movie. Oh.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
I have to watch it. See, now I gotta watch it again. Now I have to watch it again.
No, it's a great movie to rewatch over and over again. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's one of my favorites, yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that might be my favorite time travel movie.
Yeah, that and Somewhere in Time are absolutely my two favorites. Talk about falling in love in a heartbeat. I mean, guy looks at a photograph, and all of a sudden he's in love and he's got to go back in time. Okay, that part, that whole aspect is kind of stupid, but the movie itself was so terrific. I just love it.
You know, that's the movie that makes me say every time I go to McDonald's and order French fries, I go, palm frites?
That's right, palm frites. Oh, my God.
Great movie. It's a great movie.
I remember when I first saw that movie, I saw it in a theater, and I cried like a baby. And then it came on cable. And no, I don't know if it came on cable. I don't know if it did.
It went on cable.
And every time I saw it, for the next 10 times I saw it, I cried. I don't think I cry as much anymore because I'm so used to it. But at least 10 times after I saw it, I cried and cried and cried. Especially when he's sitting up there, when he thinks she's left with the troop, and then all of a sudden he's sitting up there on top of the balcony, and you see her walking down below, and she sees him, and she goes, Richard! And he turns around and he runs to the steps. And I start crying like a baby. And then the end. Oh, my God, the end. Oh, I'm always like, oh, you know, that's, I'm a woman with it. Oh, God, I love it. Anyway, now I've got to watch both those movies again. Okay. Anyway, so Lou, you give it a 2.5, and Robert, you give it a what? A 2 or 2.5?
2. Yeah. 2.
And Bobby gives it a 3. Might go up to a 4, and I give it a 3. Awesome. And Dave didn't leave you anything, huh?
I'll go through and check after the show to see if he left anything in the my email, and if he did, I'll go ahead and edit it in
and read it in. Yeah.
Hi all, I'm sorry I can't be with you live on Talking Twilight Zone. Robert was very kind enough to say that if I would send in some audio, he'd play it out on the show, so here goes. Well, we're talking about No Time Like the Past, Season 4, Episode 112, first shown on 7th of March 1963. Well, it's a time travel episode, isn't it? So I'm sure most people here will probably know me well enough by now that means it gets extra points for that very fact alone. Darna Andrews, love him as an actor, and I really liked it all the way from the beginning with the very first opening interchange between the two scientists. Now, it is a well-trodden path with science fiction where people try and change what's happened, stop the assassination of President Kennedy, things like that. It's been done in everything from Red Dwarf to Quantum Leap to Time Tunnel, and it never fails to excite me. But of course, inevitably, it always means that these attempts are foiled. Nature or history seems to have its way of circumnavigating any changes that these people make. And of course, that basically formed the first 22 or 3 minutes of the story. In fact, that would normally have been a whole Twilight Zone episode. But in actual fact, this was only a precursor to the main story, which was the next two-thirds, which were dealing with his idea that he could not change the past no matter how hard he tried. Now, this was where I got a little bit concerned about it, because no sooner than they had this interchange that, you know, he couldn't change any of these three circumstances. Oh, by the way, I was a little bit disappointed by the way that, you know, he stepped into the Sam Beckett quantum accelerator, as it were, and he went to three historic events to try and stop things happening. He didn't seem to have to come back to the chamber and then be sent out again. Now, probably that was to sort of compress this original story part without him coming back and going and so on and so forth. But they just had that conversation about him not being able to change things. And then he says that I'm going to leave this world that I don't like under the threat of the atomic bomb and so on. And I'm going to go and live in this Willoughby type of town. And then his scientist friend says, but don't forget the cause and effects. If you go back, you've got to be very careful that you don't do anything that might change things unbeknownst. And yet the whole first 20-odd minutes has told us that he hadn't been able to change anything, try as he could. So that seemed a little bit of a switcheroo. And then, of course, we get him going to this Willoughby-like town. And again, this was another thing that slightly put me off the story a couple of times. We see him in the quantum accelerator, as it were, dressed in modern suits, and he arrives there in the right outfit for the time, with not a Gladstone bag, but some sort of old-fashioned looking bag, and so on and so forth. And of course, here's where he meets his love interest, played by Patricia Bresten, who was in Nick of Time, playing William Shatner's wife, I think, in a past episode. We've got Dana Andrews here, who's about age 54, meeting this teacher. I think she's about 31 or 2, the actress at the time. But, of course, it's unrequited love, and we have a little bit of angst as he realises that, having tried to tell people about these things before, there's no way he can explain how he knows, because they would label him being a bit of a loony. So here we are in sort of Back to the Future 2, where we're in the cowboy era, and he can't do anything, to the point where he resolves to just let events take their course, until he finds out, of course, that children are involved and this woman that he's begun to care with. So, all in all, I did like it. Reminded me of a few things, as I said before, Time Tunnel, Quantum Leap, even Red Dwarf, and of course the Doctor Who episode, Father's Day. But it made me remember, it's actually a TV pilot I saw, but I believe it became a TV series. It's called Time Stalkers. I don't know if anybody's ever mentioned that before I came on. William Devine, Laura Hutton. And that's where a professor of history about the cowboy era goes back in time and becomes a bit of a gunman. Dana Andrews, I think, is a very sympathetic leading man here. And all in all, I'm probably going to give it a rating that may be higher than other people in the room, I don't know. I'm going to give it a definite 4 out of 5. It gets the extra 1. From a 3 out of 5 story, it gets the extra 1 to 4 simply because it is time travel. I'm as simple as that on that. So I've talked longer than I expected to talk. 4 out of 5 from me, and back to the live show.
All right.
What I was doing while we were thinking and talking about time travel shows, something came to mind where, you know, I mentioned about the alternate time situation. And so, real quick clip from Fringe where Walter's trying to explain it to Olivia.
To experience life as a linear progression like this. But this is an illusion, because every day life presents us with an array of choices. As a result, life should look more like this. And each choice leads to go to work, stay home, and that each choice take creates a new reality. Do you understand?
Yes, but what does it have to do with deja vu?
So it's pretty much the old Doc Brown explanation about the alternate 1985.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, it looks like our next episode is going to be 2 weeks from now on November 9th. Oh, my God, we're into November already. Cold weather, yikes. Oh, I hate it. But anyway, November 9th, and we are going to be seeing an episode with Dana Brothers and Dana Andrews' brother, Steve Forrest, and it's called The Parallel. Yes, yeah, Dana. I never even knew that Dana Andrews and Steve Forrest were brothers, but I found that out when I started getting into Twilight Zone and everything.
James Arness, Peter Graves thing and stuff like that. Yeah.
Wait, James Arness and Peter Graves are brothers too?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. It's surprising sometimes with the different last names. You never know. But, Dana Andrews, Steve Forrest. So Steve Forrest is in The Parallel, and we'll be talking about that one in 2 weeks on November 9th. And I hope Dave will be back. And Lou, I hope you'll be here. You'll be here.
I'll do my best.
Yeah. And I know Robert and Bobby will be here. So, and Moonstar, I sure hope you'll be back. Maybe you can call in the next time. Love to have you call in. And that one's also kind of about time travel. Well, yeah, isn't it, Robert, sort of, Parallel?
Well, Parallel is basically...
Parallel Universe.
Like, remember that, did I send you that DVD on... the movie about Parallel Universe mentioned to you?
Yeah.
So that'd be a good one to watch to get ready for the next one. I'm trying to, was it Journey on the Side of the Sun or something like that?
Yeah. I just have to find it.
I just have to find it
buried in all my stuff. But so I hope, Moonstar, I hope you'll be here for that
one. It has Ray Sins in it. Remember Ray Sins?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's actually a good one about a parallel Earth. He plays an astronaut that he thought he's back on his Earth, but it actually turns out to be a parallel Earth, which is the opposite, the movie I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And very similar to the episode we're going to be talking about in a couple weeks.
All right, cool. Okay, so that itself is sort of an interesting episode. I didn't like it as much as this one, but we'll talk about that then. So everybody have a wonderful rest of the weekend. Looking forward to seeing y'all in 2 weeks. And adios, amigos.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll leave with this for our next show.
Next on Twilight Zone, we take a page out of a book on the space age, and we project just a couple of degrees as to what conceivably might happen to an astronaut if suddenly and inexplicably, in the middle of an orbit, he disappears. Our story tells you how, why, and where. It stars Steve Forrest. It's called The Parallel.
Capcom, this is Phoebus 10. I've lost contact with you.
I've lost radar.
We don't have contact here either.
Capcom, this is Phoebus 10.
Just told me is fantastic.
I helped build that spacecraft. I know it very well. It's not the same one we sent off. It's almost a twin to it, down to the very last nut and bolt, but it's simply not the same spacecraft.
Colonel Gaines went up in one spacecraft, but he's obviously come back in another.
Thank you.